stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'll be talking, as I always do, about why it is that we have to hide parts of ourselves, even from ourselves. I'll be explaining how we decide what parts of ourselves we can expose and what parts of ourselves we need to hide, and give an example of what this looks like, and talk a little bit about what we can do about that and why it's so important to discover those aspects of ourselves which we have had hidden. Also, I'll be playing an interview, as I pretty much always do, with someone who makes their living or their life with an art. And today, I'm playing an interview with Jay Poindexter, who is a wonderful example of someone who had a passion, had a drive, had a destiny, but didn't know it until he was a senior in high school. Listen to Jay's interesting and inspiring story of how he discovered who he was, what he needed to do, and the challenges that he had to deal with once he did figure it out. Hang on, here come the show. Listening to The Lynn Show on the RadioEarNetwork.com. Hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about discovering the hidden parts of ourselves. If you've been listening, you know that I believe that we learn really early what are those parts of ourselves which are safe or effective, useful, to present, and which of the parts of ourselves do we need to hide. the first qualities, the ones that we think are going to get us what we want, which is, of course, the love and attention and security that our family needs to provide for us in order for us to survive. So these first qualities, I call these our cover story. And again, if you've been listening, you know that I think of it much the way a spy has a cover story. They create a cover story so that they will be safe, so that the real truth about them will not be known, because if it is known, then they will be in danger. And I believe this is equally true for all of us. We know that our life depends on those giants who are taking care of us, however well they are taking care of us or not, and that we want at all costs not to worry them, annoy them, make them angry, frustrate them, embarrass them, or even scare them. We want them to be fine. We want them to be happy. We don't realize, actually, that it's not in our power to make this happen, but we know that our lives, as safety, security, happiness of those lives, depend on how happy and comfortable our parents are. So while we don't realize that this is really not in our power to do, and sometimes parents confuse us by telling us that it's in our power to make them happy or not. They'll say things like, you know, if only you didn't, or why don't you, or when will you, or, you know. And the implication is that it is what we are doing that is making these people happy, sad, angry, frustrated, scared. You know, it's really unfortunate, but lots of grown-ups don't really understand that they are in charge of their feelings. We each are in charge of our feelings, and so we lay the responsibility for how we are feeling off on others. And unfortunately, a lot of parents lay that responsibility off on their children. And as a result, when we are children, we feel responsible for their happiness, well-being, whatever it is that's going on with them. And the only way that we find to have an impact on what our parents are feeling and how they're acting is by what we demonstrate. We are a good boy or girl, or we are a bad boy or girl. We are what they want, or we are not what they want. And so you can see, it's not rocket science, that our primary task in childhood is to be whatever it is they need us to be so they'll be all right. Now, you know, if you have a parent who is taking responsibility for what he or she feels and not laying that responsibility off on you as a child, then you have the freedom to be whoever it is you are. And to some extent, more, some people have that and some people don't have that. But pretty much none of us gets it entirely. Because there are all kinds of ways that we can get the idea that who we are and what we do is or isn't okay. Some of it's directly with, you know, parents saying, you know, don't cry, big boys don't cry, or, you know, little girls don't use that language, or they don't get angry, or whatever the really direct statements that we hear from parents. But there are lots of circumstantial ways in which we get the idea that some behavior or other is not okay. And so we create a cover story, which is made up of all of the qualities which seem to work, seem not to make things worse or actually make things better. The problem with this is that although those qualities really are ours, we begin to put the other qualities, the ones that didn't work, I call it putting it undercover. And generally speaking, these choices that we make to put some things in the cover story and some things undercover are the smartest, most effective choices, the healthiest choices that we can make. And they make for the most comfortable childhood that we can have. Unfortunately, it is quite often later in life when we need the very qualities which we have put undercover in order to live the most successful, the happiest, the most comfortable life that is possible for us. I usually give examples at the beginning of the show, and So I'm going to give an example that I sometimes give. If you were unfortunately the target of neglect or abuse, you may have learned to put any kind of assertiveness undercover. Any kind of assertiveness, demanding any kind of activity on your part, may have come in for punishment, neglect, embarrassment. So you would then learn that your ability to be assertive in your own behalf was a dangerous quality and might very well have gone undercover. When you place a quality undercover, you begin by hiding it from everybody else, but you wind up forgetting that you have it. So later in life, when it might very well be in your best interests to be assertive in your own behalf, you may very well have forgotten that you have the capacity to be assertive undercover. And it becomes important then to recover that quality. And that's really what this show is all about letting you know that you may very well have qualities undercover which you could use now, and they're already there. You don't have to learn how to do them. You don't have to develop the skill. They're already there. I talk a lot about this in my book, When You Can, You Will. If you are curious about it or me or the show, you can find that information on my website, thelynshow.com. It's thelynneshow.com. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, because you'll get a different Lynn. She didn't write my book. Anyway, the other thing I do in this show is I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. Because in our culture, where it is so difficult to make a life as an artist, people who do that are people who are definitely who they are, at least in their work. They are what we call in my psychotherapy biz congruent. They are in sync with themselves. And you can hear it when you hear them talk. So that's why I interview them. And today I am interviewing Jay Poindexter. And Jay is an example of a guy who, when he finally discovered who he is, you can hear it, it's so clearly intrinsic. He's so clearly congruent. But a lot of people come in really knowing who they are. And if you listened in August, you heard four musicians who were playing by the time they were three. This is not as unusual as it sounds. But in Jay, and also in other people I'm interviewing in this month, we hear the discovery. I didn't come in knowing about this. I didn't think I wanted to do this. I didn't know this was me. And then the light bulb, the epiphany. And Jay's story is one of those, and also so delightful. He's so charming and so much who he is and so alive and so very, I'll say it again, who he is, which is the reason that I interview these people. So sit back and enjoy listening to a man who is who he really is, Jay Poindexter.
So I'm here with Jay Poindexter. In my kitchen.
Yay!
Yay, because he was kind enough to come out here and do this with me. So, you don't know anything, so I'll just tell you.
Tell me something.
Yes, I'll tell you something. I host an internet radio show, and one of the things I do on the show is I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And I suspect that this has been true for you.
It has been.
It has been, yes. That's what I thought. And I always ask the same question, and it is, how did it happen to you? How did you find it? How did it find you? How did it start?
The first time I had any on-stage opportunity was back in grade school when there was a production of Cinderella happening in middle school, and my stepdad was involved with the production, and I got cast as the prince. There were alternating Cinderellas. Yeah. The before and after Cinderella, and my sister was cast as the Princess Cinderella. And that was the first time I had some onstage experience, and I didn't mind it.
Oh, now, wait a second, wait. So, how old were you?
12, 13,
12, 13, okay, so
yeah.
Are you saying that previous to that, You had no hint that you might like it, no interest in it, no, you didn't know about it?
I had no idea about it. My parents used to take my sister and I to the summer touring Broadway shows, and I know I was enthralled by watching the storytelling and the music and the dancing. And it, I thought it was just very magical, but nothing about it.
But it didn't say me. It didn't say, oh, I'd like to know. None of that. How interesting. Okay, so here we have you at 12 saying, well, this isn't bad, or something like that. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay, so.
And then for some reason, I auditioned for a summer theatrical group called the Gollywogs. We wore these leotards and bloomers, and we had these bright orange wigs with red circles on our cheeks and bright colored sneakers so everyone would see us. And we would go to the various malls in the area and put on these half-hour shows for kids. I did it. It was a whim. We had fun, and then I let that go.
Wow.
And then my senior year in high school, something sparked in me, and I decided to audition for the choirs. I had been in the band and the musical instrument area.
What did you play?
I played the clarinet, and then I was a high school drum major for 3 years.
Wow.
Head drum major.
Okay, so we do have music, and we do have, to some extent, performance.
Exactly.
Sort of going through it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious, did you have any other idea of something? Were you thinking, oh, I'll be a doctor, or I'll be a soldier, or I'll be a... Nothing, no?
I had no idea
You were just coasting. It was,
one
foot in front of the other.
Yeah, kind of. You know, and being a good kid, and being involved in extracurricular activities and National Honor Society and, you know, doing all the things that was being expected of me.
Yes, very good boy.
And so this was kind of stepping out on a limb, a somewhat of an alternative limb, to audition for the senior class musical. I was actually a senior, and the musical was happening. The big musical that year was going to be Guys and Dolls.
Ooh.
And I had an assistant band director who was going to be choreographing that. And he saw something in me that he thought would lead ultimately to me being a performer. And so he encouraged me to go to this audition. And I sang and I did some choreography and they cast me in one of the roles.
What were you?
Nicely Johnson.
Oh, you're kidding.
Normally Nicely
he's a big fat guy.
He's a little portly, yeah.
It's my favorite musical.
Oh, really?
Guys and Dolls. I know it. Yeah, so... How interesting.
Yeah. So I got to sing that big number, Sit Down on Your Rock in the Boat. And it went really well. And I got a lot of positive feedback.
It's a great role.
It's fun.
Yeah. Wow.
And then that led to a full year of participation in the arts. And we did Godspell. We did a Pfeiffer Review. We did Carnival, where I had the big lead in that my senior year. And it just opened up a whole other world that, and another aspect of myself that I didn't know I had inside of me.
Especially
the dance, because it seemed like I could pick up choreography pretty well. I was on the gymnastics team for 3 years, so I had some physicality, was aware of my body. Mm-hmm. And the dancing, I think, helped refine that physicality and that body awareness.
And you were flexible.
I was very flexible.
Right. Right.
And strong. So I could do the lifts, I could do the splits, and I could
But you had no training.
No training.
Wow. In any of it.
No.
You didn't have dance training, you didn't have voice training.
I didn't have any acting experience.
You're just a natural.
I was just kind of, thanks.
Well, but it's
kind of going on my instincts and my gut and listening to what the instructors were telling me and trying to mimic in a way what they were sharing with me. I found later in life that being a good dancer, there is a part of it, there's mimicry involved. You're watching what the choreographer wants you to do, and then as you get the steps right, then you start to work on the feeling and the interpretation. But first of all, you've got to know what the steps are.
And you have to do them.
In time. And you have to do them in a set amount of time within the rhythm that's been prescribed by the choreographer, and then from there you add your own color, shading, and interpretation on the movement. So that really sparked me, and then I kind of hid that desire for theater under a bushel because I got an appointment to the Air Force Academy after high school.
Aye.
Totally different world, totally different mindset.
Oh my God.
And it took me a year to figure out that that was not where I needed to be.
How did that happen?
How did I get the appointment?
Yeah.
My stepdad thought it would be a great way for me to
grow up.
Some structure, grow up in an environment such as that, which was very structured, and he thought that I would be able to find my way a little better in the world.
All right, so now, are you saying that he thought, either he, I don't know, I have a bunch of thoughts in my head, either he thought you weren't structured, or he was worried about all this theatrical activity and didn't want you to fall in love with that.
Yeah, that was that. And to be perfectly honest, he thought that going into a military environment was going to help me become
a man. Yeah, with a capital M.
But why would you put me in that situation with a bunch of other men? We showered together.
Yes.
Let's work through this slowly here. I'm like, dude.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Right. Oh, right. How much did he know? Or he just suspected?
He was aware that I was gay.
He was?
Yes, and that was not sitting very well with he or my mom at the time.
Oh, honey. Well, you came out very early then.
Yeah, this is back in the 70s.
When really difficult to do.
It was much more of a challenge.
No kidding.
Yeah.
And in a very straight environment with pretty straight parents.
Was, very much so. The travails that I went through helped to groom me for a wonderful career in theater.
Yeah.
It really did. I mean, I left the Air Force Academy after a year. That was not where I needed to be. I came back to Indiana and started a theater degree program at Indiana University.
Okay, so hold on for a second.
Okay.
He got you the appointment, and because you're such a good guy, you went.
I went.
That's all I'm thinking,
gave it a
right?
shot.
Right.
Going to give it my best shot.
Right. You knew you needed to be out of there.
Yes.
And so you called him up and you said, hey, stepdad, I can't do this anymore.
I can't do this anymore. And I started the process of getting away
out.
From there. And it took about 6 weeks because they're very keen on... They have to deal with a lot of psychological dramas with first-year folks that come to any academy. So their attrition rates, they want to keep that down.
Right, so they want to try
and
keep you.
So they had me talking to a lot of different people, and my story was consistent from person to person to person. So it was just basically going through what they set up for me to go through, and then I finally got my discharge papers.
Wow.
And went home.
So you literally went home back to your parents' home?
Actually, I ended up living with my father and stepmother at that point.
So was that all right?
It was better.
Because
my stepmom was helpful with my dad dealing with my sexuality because her brother was gay.
Ah.
And he grew up in the 50s, he was a young man.
Boy.
Much more repression then,
yes.
even.
Yes.
And I've since kept in touch with him, and we have some great conversations, and he, you know, has shared his journey mm-hmm. with all of this. He was a school teacher, so that had to be so closeted and undercover. But it was those situations, I think, that helped to make me who I am, because as my dad softened around that issue and still respected me and loved me for the person I was, that gave me such a sense of support coming from that male figure mm-hmm. in my life, that dominant male figure in my life, to actually go to college and pursue theater and get all the training I needed, because in my mind I was going to New York. That was where I needed to go. To pursue this desire, and it was the only thing on my mind that seemed to make sense for me, mm-hmm. was that I had to go to New York and try and be in theater.
Okay, so so it took you, it's interesting, it was a very, I want to say long, but I mean, I suppose it wasn't that long, but it took you a long time to find it, but once you found it, it was very clear that that was it.
That was it.
That was it. There was
no other option. Felt right. It made sense. It was the easiest decision to make for me, mm-hmm. and there were no perceived obstacles.
Wow.
Yeah. I had a place to go and stay when I got to New York, so that helped that dilemma. And then it was about finding work. And I found a job relatively quickly, then the process started of... actually, it was just work.
Mm-hmm. Just work. You needed to support
yourself.
Working
in a fast food restaurant.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Need to make some money.
Right.
And then about 2 months afterward, I was able to move into my first shared apartment situation. So I had my own bedroom, and I could, you know, get a sense of being an independent in a big city and start to figure out how I would go about getting work in theater.
Okay, how old were you then?
I was 22, yeah.
And what year was that?
I moved to New York in 1982. I drove a Rent-A-Wreck car. Did you ever hear of Rent-A-Wreck?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think they're in business any longer, but I drove a Rent-A-Wreck car straight through and had my sister loan me her CB radio.
Oh.
So I listened to the truckers to keep me awake. And drove all the way to New York.
That's great.
Unpacked my stuff and then took and dropped the car off.
Mm-hmm.
And then found my way back into the city. And
had you not been to New York before?
I had been there before.
Mm-hmm.
I had been there on a band trip.
Oh,
back
band
in high school. Yeah,
right.
We had gone there.
Were you still playing or you weren't playing anymore?
The instrument?
Yeah.
No, I played the clarinet in high school and that was pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a sense of what it was. And ironically enough, the hotel that I stayed in high school was, I could look out the windows and directly across the street was the theater I ended up working in when I got my first Broadway show.
My God. What theater was it?
It was the Winter Garden Theater. And at that time, the show Pacific Overtures was playing.
Oh, wow.
So I could look out my hotel room and see this theater. And it was right across from the backstage, so at night we could look out and see the actors going, coming out of the stage door. And never did it ever dawn on me that that would be where I'd be working when I got my first professional job.
And you'd be one of them.
And I would be one of those people coming in and out of that very stage door.
Oh my God. It's really amazing.
No,
it really is.
Really, it really was amazing. And the road getting there it didn't seem hard at all. It seemed as though I was on the right path. I was able to train and get stronger in my dancing. I was able to find voice teachers. I was going to auditions. I started going to auditions for Cats.
Mm-hmm.
And often I would get a call to come in and audition again. And I thought, wow, this is cool.
Mm-hmm.
They actually remembered who I was.
And want to see me again.
And they want to see me again. And one thing kept building after another. And finally, I got this one particular call, and they said, we want you to come in, and this time the audition's going to be at the theater. Cats was playing at the Winter Garden Theater.
Oh, my God.
I had never seen the show. I had never been in that theater before. So I said, well, this is just another audition. It didn't sink in on me that I was going to be in the theater this time for the very first time. And I went, and my name was at the stage door. And there were only a list of 8 people on that list.
Oh, my.
And I went, oh, this is different.
This is different, right?
So I found a place to change into my dance clothes, and I was backstage. And I started seeing, and then I walked out on the stage.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's when it really sunk in that this was for something great. This audition was going to be special.
This was serious.
This was serious.
Mm-hmm.
All the other times had been just for play.
Mm-hmm.
But this was really serious.
This was what all those other times was supposed to get you.
I guess so. And I was there with other guys who had been auditioning along the same path that I had been on.
Mm-hmm.
And we did the same choreography. But there were a group of people out there in the audience watching us that I had never seen before.
Mm-hmm.
And we did the choreography, and they made some cuts, and I made it down to 4. And we did some more choreography, and then they made it down, and then they wanted to hear us sing. And I'm still thinking, okay. And we did tumbling passes, too, because that's what I did. I was a tumbler. I was an acrobat. So they wanted to see me tumble. And I did an acrobatic pass, but I didn't realize that the stage for Cats is what they call raked.
Oh, yes.
So it's on an incline.
Right.
And I was tumbling downhill.
Oh, my God.
And so I was picking up speed, and I started to to do a back flip, and I ended up landing square on my butt.
Oh, dear.
So, of course, I'm, like, so heartsick about that.
Right.
It seemed to me a huge mistake. And I bounded up, and I was like, oh, well,
yeah, right.
There goes
oh,
that.
Yeah, right.
And they said, okay, are you okay? And they were like, they were cautious. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. I said, I'm just a little crestfallen, but I'll survive. And then it was, they said, okay, thank you.
What did you sing? Do you remember what your audition piece was?
I don't remember what it was.
Oh, how funny.
I don't remember.
Did you use one?
I know they did ask me to stick around, and it was just me and one other guy then, even after I fell on my butt.
Really?
And
had you already sung, or then they asked you to sing after? Do you remember?
They asked me to sing after that, when it was just me and the other guy. And I sang. I don't remember what it was. And then they vocalized me.
Really?
And they wanted to see how high I
could
sing.
Right.
And I went as high as I could, and on the next one, I didn't prepare, and I cracked.
Yeah, right.
And they all took it in stride, and they smiled. They said, thank you, Mr. Poindexter. And I went backstage, and the other guy came out, and he nailed his song, and they vocalized him. And then we were back there wondering.
Right.
You know, wondering. And I was, at that point, just pleased to have had the experience.
Yeah.
I was so comfortable with just being happy that I was there.
Yeah.
That it was, I was full.
Yeah, you had already won.
Yeah. To be on a Broadway stage auditioning was like, wow.
Yeah.
And to make it this far.
Mm-hmm.
And they came back and they said, gentlemen, we want to thank you. It's been a tough decision, but Mr. Poindexter, we'd like for you to come back out on stage.
Oh, my God, I have tears.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Oh, my God.
At that point, my brain left my body. I had no idea what was going on.
I'm sure.
I still wasn't believing this.
Of course not.
And I walked out on stage, and the director of the show came up to me and said, Mr. Poindexter, would you like to be in Cats? And all I could think to say was, twist my arm.
Yeah, right.
And it was, and then I slipped into unconsciousness.
I'm sure you did.
It was just such a tremendous, and I had no idea what that meant. And they said, well, there are things that need to happen
this
now.
This is so funny. You're busy auditioning, as though auditioning is the job.
Yeah.
Right. And then they give you the job, but you aren't actually prepared.
I wasn't prepared for this part.
Oh, that's hilarious.
It was awesome. And I totally was having an out-of-body experience. And
I'm sure.
They were saying, well, you've got a contract to sign, and we've got a schedule now for costume fittings, and rehearsals are going to start on this date. And I said,
you didn't hear a thing.
No, it just kind of flew right by.
Right,
and I said, excuse me, but I have a restaurant job, because I was working at a really upscale restaurant in Midtown Manhattan. And you know, because the pay was really great. And I said,
right.
I have a restaurant job, and I just want to know, are the rehearsals going to be during the day? Totally naive. So I can go to my job in the evening. They took a beat.
I'll bet they did.
They laughed.
They have never heard this.
They had never heard that before. And they were like, Mr. Poindexter, you are ours now.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So that means that you need to go and tell them what's happened, and you're going to have to leave that job. And my whole life changed in that moment.
Yeah.
I went into the restaurant that night, and I said, I talked to the manager, shift manager, and I said, I need to talk to you. I was so apologetic because this was going to leave them in a lurch, and it was just all of this wanting to take care of them in that moment that was coming up in me. And it was almost an embarrassment of riches or success that
I understand.
Was experiencing.
I understand exactly.
And they were like, dude, you just got a Broadway show.
Are you kidding?
And you're apologizing to us? Go!
Right.
Get out of here and come back and visit us and tell us how it is.
Oh, God, Jay. I just want to say that your respective parents and step-parents created such a good boy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, That's where this is all, I mean, that's where all that is. Is that you're responsible, that you don't leave people in the lurch, that you do what you've signed on to do, that mm-hmm. all that stuff, never mind that, you know, somebody just gave you a magic wand.
I know. Just open the key. I got the keys to the castle.
The castle. That's right. That's right. Right.
And so the process, the journey began, and I ended up working with one guy in particular who was the dance captain, and he taught me Cats, and I'll never forget him. His name was Rene Clemente, and I had seen him when I was 19 years old on another trip to see theater in New York. I saw him do a chorus line, and he was the dance captain in the chorus line. Mm-hmm. And a good friend of mine got me into an audition for a chorus line so I could have the experience
right.
of what that world is going to be like.
Wow.
I sucked. I could have been dancing legless. I had no concept of retaining any kind of choreography on that level. He was very generous. He was very kind. And I got cut, but he understood why I was there and the experience that I was trying to get from this. And when we got in rehearsals for Cats, I shared the story with him. He did not remember it, but I thanked him. I had the opportunity to thank him.
That's lovely.
For being so generous and kind-hearted to a greenhorn. And he became a good friend. And a peer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not to mention a teacher.
And a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And he, yeah.
that's an amazing story.
Thanks.
That is an amazing story.
And to share it with you really still fills me.
Yeah, I can hear
really
it.
Really with
I can hear excitement. It. In a way, that the magic of that, it just doesn't go away, does it?
No, I guess it doesn't.
You know?
After all these years.
Yeah, well, so I'm curious now, did your respective parents and step-parents come to see you?
They did, and they rallied.
Did they?
They did. They were so supportive and so loving, and they were very proud of me.
No, lovely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
I felt good.
Okay, so I'm assuming then that you stayed in theater for as long as you could.
I had a 16-year career.
Yeah, wow.
Cats was the first Broadway show, and I was there for 6 years on Broadway, and then I did 1 year in the touring company. Mm-hmm. And then I had enough of being an animal on stage, and I wanted to try being a human on stage. And I got into a workshop at Lincoln Center of a new musical called My Favorite Year, which was a musical version of the movie that Peter O'Toole was in.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the workshop for 6 weeks, and they decided to give it its Broadway run. And we ran for 6 months, maybe. So that was my second Broadway show.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to work with Tim Curry and Lanny Kazan, Andrea Martin. It was another, you know, great experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I did regional theater and several national tours. I played the Van Wezel several times.
Really?
A couple of times on national tours, once with Cats, and then again with How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. And Ralph Macchio was the star of that.
I can't remember the name of the, right, Karate.
Karate Kid.
Right, yeah. I can see him, you know, but I can
right,
hear it.
Yeah. So it was an amazing opportunity, and I got to meet a lot of wonderful people. When I was at Cats, and the show was still in its infancy, so it was the thing to see. So we were constantly sold out.
Are you saying this was the first?
This was the show opened in 83, and I replaced an original Cat in 1984.
Right, okay.
So it was still the creme de la creme.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember Pearl Bailey coming to see the show, and we would wait for our celebrities on the steps that went up to the dressing room right after the show, and we'd still be in Cat makeup and wigs and costumes. And she came out of the audience, and there was a door there that she could enter. And she came on, and we started applauding her. And she got down on her hands and knees and crawled over to us and said, "See, I can be a cat too."
Oh, my God.
And we were like, "This is Pearl Bailey," on her hands and knees in front of us.
Amazing.
And we were dumbstruck.
Amazing.
By that. It was the most awesome thing.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. So we had lots of celebrities still coming and wanting to get their photographs taken with cats.
Really?
I remember going to the White House for the Easter egg. They have an Easter egg hunt on the grounds of the White House during the Easter weekend. And it was during Ronald Reagan's tenure there. He wasn't there, but George Bush Sr. was the vice president at that point. And we got a private tour of the White House in costume. Plus, we got our photograph with George Bush Sr.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who was going to be president.
Who was going to be president.
That's right.
And, you know, some of the many opportunities that...
Well, okay,
happened.
So how did you wind up in Sarasota?
I had stopped performing in 1988 and wanted to still remain connected with theater. Mm. So when I was in college, I had worked as a dresser for the operas there at Indiana University. They do like 8 to 10 full-scale operas a year. So I had experience working backstage as a dresser. I decided that that's what I wanted to segue into. I had always enjoyed the work. It kept me connected with performers. Mm-hmm. I kind of felt I had a simpatico with them.
Yeah.
I understood their needs, could understand their temperament, and I was fast. I knew how to get them in and out of a costume and not panic when you get to the zippers or the snaps part of it. And so my dresser that I was with in Cats had become a very good friend. She was now a wardrobe supervisor on the show Ragtime. And I went to her, and I asked her advice about this, and she told me what I needed to do. I needed to join that union, and she was willing to try and offer me some initial subbing work.
Mm-hmm.
And that led me into working at Ragtime. I did some sub work at Bring in the Noise, Bring in the Funk. And then I was off and flying. I was on the crew for The Music Man. I started to get some TV experience. And I was ready to make the leap from live theater to television and film because I really liked the work.
Mm-hmm.
And I was good at wardrobe.
Yeah.
So I was fine. My ego was in check. And I didn't feel I needed to be on stage anymore.
You did it.
I had done it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was ready to see my life differently.
Yes.
Which brought me to a chapter in my life where I was like, what would my life look like if I were no longer living in New York doing this, whatever this is? And a relationship opportunity presented itself.
Always a good thing.
Which brought me here to Sarasota.
Always a good thing.
Always a good thing.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
It's like, okay, well, this is definitely going to be a change.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I've been trying to...
So when did you get here?
2003. June of 2003.
Okay.
And started trying to find my way here. There is an arts community. And finding work has been a challenge.
So you haven't been interested in performing here?
Well, I haven't had the opportunity. The theater here seems to require a commitment of either days or evenings for rehearsals.
Yeah, right.
And I've always been seeking work.
Yeah, work.
Gainful employment.
Right. Oh, I forgot. You do need to eat.
Yeah, there is that.
There is that.
But I've been, you know, connected with a lot of the arts institutions here, like the Oslo, and I've worked backstage there, and... done some work with Sarasota Ballet, and
mm-hmm.
so it. My first work actually was on the wardrobe crew for Sarasota Opera, and that's how I got into that world and started meeting
so
people.
You wouldn't? Would you want to be on stage again?
I think I wouldn't mind it now. You know, you kind of revisit the rules you make for your life and see if they're still valid. You know, and with my background, I think it would, or I could be an asset.
I'm sure.
To this community, just from the experience
I've had. Absolutely positive.
Yeah, but also from a performance standpoint, I've done some amazing stage management stuff, too, with working with a producer who did the Theater Hall of Fame, and working on tribute events, and having to have some interesting encounters, like with Carol Channing and Elaine Stritch, and just being backstage for those special moments. And I remember one event working backstage at Lincoln Center, actually, and it was a tribute to Lena Horne. And there were all of these stars coming to pay their respects to her, and we didn't know if she was going to be able to come out at the end. And she had a box.
Yeah.
And her family was all around her, and then all of a sudden, I'm looking, and I don't see Ms. Horne in the box. And I'm talking to the producer, and I'm like, Ms. Horne's gone. What's going on? And so I go backstage, and she had found her way backstage, and she was talking to all the people who were there to pay tribute to her.
Oh, God.
And then she came out on stage at the end. Of course, the audience went crazy. And she looked at the conductor, and she sang a song.
Oh, God.
And it was the most spectacular moment I've ever witnessed in theater, because I could see her, very frail, and holding herself up with this cane, but this voice came out of her, and there was that star that we all saw in movies and on the stage.
Right.
That lady, that grand lady up there, and I took my eyes off of her for a split second to look at the audience. And there
and
was
all
just sheer joy, tears, and there was not a line on any face. Mm-hmm. There was nothing but just sheer delight in this moment.
Right. That level of quality and commitment, it transforms everybody.
It does.
Right.
I was seeing a transformation in that hall.
Yeah. Yeah.
In that moment.
Yes. That's what's so amazing about the arts.
Yeah.
That it has that capacity.
It has that power.
Right.
To transform a life for a split second.
Right.
Or cause or plant the seed of a thought that can help some young person find their path in life.
Yes.
Or help change the perspective of someone who's been stuck around something in their life to free them.
Or even just, you know, I was talking about The Drowsy Chaperone. I saw it on Broadway. And I remember that the night that I saw it, I don't remember what was wrong with me, but I was, I wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to TKTS, and the only ticket they had was one of those limited view tickets, you know, that,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And it was the last...
Partial view,
right? right. And it was the last night that... I've forgotten who starred in it, but it was the last night he was going to be in it. And I didn't know much about it. I thought, oh, what the hell? And I want to tell you that 10 or 15 minutes into the show, I felt wonderful.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, this is what musical theater is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
It changed my chemistry.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't change my life, but,
no.
But that moment,
or
it changed.
Or those circumstances in your life.
That's exactly right. But it changed how I felt about
yes.
it, right?
And you got a bit of space in your life.
That's exactly right.
And that was something I had to remind myself after 7 years of doing Cats.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing every night, it became a factory job.
Exactly.
I had to mentally, consciously remind myself of why I was there.
Right.
It wasn't about me. It wasn't about the realities and the situations on the outside of that stage door. When I walked through that door, I had the opportunity to bring joy.
That's right.
Wonder and excitement to someone else's life.
Yes.
And when I walked out of that stage, I still had to carry that responsibility with me when I talked to people.
Yeah.
When I stopped and yeah. they thanked me for what they had just witnessed and signed their program.
Yeah.
And that awareness I could see, and besides being able to watch people's faces in the audience as they went through the storytelling of Cats, that awareness and having that world to participate in got me through a lot of challenges in my early life. I had a partner who had AIDS.
Oh, God.
And being his caretaker was a huge responsibility. And I was losing friends left and right within the body of cats or in the theatrical world that I was in.
Right.
So when I would leave my apartment, on my walk to the theater, I had an opportunity to kind of, okay, I could clear my head of what the situation of my reality is right now. And for 3 hours, I can enter in this make-believe world.
Right.
And bring joy and happiness and glean.
Enlighten yourself.
Enlighten myself.
Right.
So that I can go back.
Right.
And be the caretaker I need to be for my partner.
Yeah, it is. It is true. I think. Well, you know, you're preaching to the converted here, but I do believe that is the gift that the arts, and for me too, particularly the theater and musical theater.
Yeah.
But all of them, you know, the fine arts, you know, just the opera, the music, the writing, you know. All has that possibility.
Yes.
Okay, so I want to ask you what I ask everybody, and that is, we've been talking about it pretty much, but if you could think for a minute about what it's been like to live a life that's been dedicated to an art, what you might say about that, other than what you have already said, because we have actually been talking about that.
When I think back, I am so appreciative of having had the life I've lived thus far and the opportunities that I've been able to take advantage of. And mostly, there's a sense of joy about the path that my life has gone. Being involved with the arts has created such a sense of fun in my life. I have my memories, I have my mementos, I have photographs that I can look back on, and never ever did I think that I wasn't in the place that I was meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
I might not have known what the outcome was, but I've always been grateful for being on the other side, because something else more wonderful has been awaiting me.
Mm-hmm.
And the arts, I think if it hadn't been for the arts, I don't know if I would be the person I am today or have grown into the man that I am today. I don't know if I would have the same appreciations and sensitivities and awareness of the world in which I live.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that comes from my core, my heart chakra, that area within me where there's feeling and emotion and passion. Yeah, it's a very passionate life being an artist.
Yes, it is.
It's very creative. And I could never understand the torment that some folks felt with their participation in the arts, because it always seemed to me that creativity was coming from such an inspired place that it just created more joy and aliveness, as opposed to a feeling of being beaten down or put upon. I've worked with people in the arts, and they have manifested such struggles with their performance and such angst around it.
Are you meaning, you know, it's not good enough, or they don't appreciate me,
or
I don't get enough
neuroses,
work?
Huge neuroses and huge ego. And they tend to forget what a gift they're able to share when they walk out on that stage, and how, for the most part, most audiences are desirous that you do well.
Yeah, right.
They have opened their hearts and their minds to a good time.
Right.
And they see no evil, no badness in you.
No, and they want you to be good.
They want
right.
you to be good.
They want to love you.
They do. They
right.
want to love you.
Right.
And whatever you say and do. How supportive is that?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So in my mind, there should be no angst.
Oh, I want to stop there. I love that.
No angst.
Thank you so much, Dave.
You're welcome.
This was great.
You are listening to The Lynn Show on the RadioEarNetwork.com. So, what did I tell you? so much who he really is. There's no guile, there's no hesitation, there's no dissembling. What you hear is what there is, and it's so wonderful. And his commitment to the joy of what he has done with his life, to no angst, to being in the pleasure of it, should be inspirational to us all. To embrace ourselves, who we are, and what we do with that. Whew. This is the reason I do what I do, and Jay is a wonderful, wonderful example of that. So thank you, Jay. And as quite often happens to me, I'm running out of time. So I need to thank the other person I have to thank every week, and that is Josh Hackney, without whom the show could never have happened, because Josh is my IT guru. He not only taught me everything I know about editing and recording, but he fixes the sound whenever it needs it and also helps me to remember what I have forgotten, what I learned and can't remember how to do. If you need any help with IT, with computer, with recording, with electronics, with the web, you want Josh. So go up on my website, thelinshow.com. Don't forget the E. Say, I need Josh. Or, you know, email me. Tell me whatever you want to. Ask me questions or not. And as always, I hope that you heard something you can use in this show, something that you knew but had forgotten, something you never knew, something that stimulated you, tickled you, intrigued you, something that will bring you back. Because I will be here next week, same time, same station. And I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Always in my face and figure I've both seen better days. I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper, I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang, so you won't hear me simper. I may have got a limper, but I won't go with a whimper.